My name is Bochun, and it's kind of interesting because I never went by my full name ever, really, my whole entire life. That, everyone's always called me Bo, but when I came out as an artist and I needed a stage name, I was like, what should I do? And then I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go by my real name. And no one knew who I was. No one knew that was my real name. But yeah, that's just the story on the name. But let's see. I mean, I grew up in a musical family. My father was a musician. He was like, not for a living, but it was his hobby. And when he immigrated here to the United States, he kind of kept up with that passion. I grew up where we always had a room that was devoted to like music equipment. So I literally grew up where my parents would have gatherings every weekend and live music playing. Often it was mostly traditional Cambodian music mixed in with like some 1970s rock and roll. I was telling Hector, like Creedence Clearwater, So I grew up in a musical family, started doing music, playing music with my dad and his band during my teen years. And then around 2006, my dad passed. Well, I stopped playing with my father because there were some musical differences that we were going through. So, and one of the NPR stories you can hear about that, but basically, I just sort of wanted to come out of my own on my own, and make original music, which I wasn't getting to do with my dad and his band. When you're playing in the Cambodian American music circuit, you essentially what you're doing is just recycling songs. You're doing covers and you're doing popular music, you're playing weddings and community events. And for me, I think growing up in the States, I really wanted to kind of explore my artistic, expression, and I wanted to write music. And so I stopped playing with my dad later, as I got older. And then after college, I joined Oakland hip hop funk and jazz band. And that was cool. We played eclectic music. I was with them for a little while. We toured and stuff. And then I don't know, I decided to leave that band too eventually. And then my father passed away like in 2006, in November of 2006. And kind of, I think that period was, I mean, it was a very difficult period. But at the same time, I started to feel kind of like I felt disconnected from my identity and my roots, and I wanted to do I wasn't really doing music anymore. My dad was gone. I left this band. And so in 2009, I just decided that I was going to come out and pursue a music career. And that was how the solo music journey started. But I actually went back to my producer, who works on all of the music for me, is actually my old band member from the other band. And I just went back to him. I said, hey, I want to do music. And one of the first things I wanted to do was, for me on the personal level, it was kind of my own journey to grieving, I think, the passing of my father, and then to find that connection back to the music that I grew up with, but to also to the community and to being Cambodian. Because once my dad was gone, I didn't really have like those get-togethers where you see Cambodian family members or friends come over eating food, all of that, like all of that stopped. And so it was weird for a while for me. And that was the birth of Chinamon 16, the first single, the big single off of the album. It was a great journey, not so much of like, oh my gosh, are you really making money? Are you so popular? Are you a pop artist? It was just a great experience. I mean, being able to go out and meet all these different communities, to have these experiences of performing in different events and connecting with a lot of nonprofits and organizations. I ended up doing that a lot, getting into that circuit a lot. When I get asked to do conferences, and they're really random, like a lot of times the conferences happen once or twice a year from various organizations. Like the most recent one I did was CRAC, Southeast Asian Resource Center, Action Resource Center. I don't know if you guys are familiar with CRAC, but they're basically a huge organization. They do legislation and policy making, to help out the Southeast Asian community. And working with deportees is actually one of their big current issues they've been dealing with right now. Because I haven't said yes to gigs in a while, I don't get those as much. And because I haven't been actively performing, but if it's an organization or an event or a conference that is important to me, I get to pick and choose now. And sometimes I'll do, like, I'm gonna do a Zoom class next week for a professor artist friend of mine in Seattle. So it's definitely moved into more of the academia world. The plight of the Cambodian people, and as much as we're, this project is trying to move away from the Khmer Rouge, but also, to see how culturally a whole group reconstructs itself after the Khmer Rouge, you know, I mean, after an atrocity like that happens. So it was like the two things. It was like getting people to who didn't know about Cambodia, now they know. And at the same time, those who are, you know, could have a sense of connection somewhere. And so, I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to do with the art and the music and why I wrote some of those songs. And then there's so many different other, I think, things that come into play. Like for me, being in Oakland, there's something about Oakland, you know. Oakland's kind of like the city, it's the birth city of so many social justice movements. And I mean, we're a city that doesn't have a mall, right? So we don't have a mall. We're all like small business, mama, papa, support your local artist type of community. I felt that for a while, like people felt like what made you Cambodian were these things, these stereotypes that they would associate with being Cambodian. I feel like, you know, why I have my Cambodian pride is because for me, there were different things. To me, it was certain little subtle things of even just learning how to respect my elders, you know, certain traditions that I think are important in terms of preserving the culture. And that to me, like last night, I burned some incense, you know, because it was mm-hmm. Cambodian New Year. And that doesn't have to be like you have to be Buddhist or you have to be religious. It's just you're culturally practicing a practice because of a celebration, you know? And I find that those things to me define more of what it means to be Khmer than it is the stereotypes of what the folks are thinking about. In the States, you know, it's such a big deal to kind of maintain that, because I feel like the generation, like my mom's generation and stuff, they're still, you got to try to hang on to everything that you can to when life was good. So when you're sitting there, like one of the, you know, like I do in this, I always talk about how for my parents and for all the refugees, when my dad would host these basement parties and they'd play all their favorite songs from 1970s and they got to eat all their favorite Cambodian dishes that they know, you know, life was good at that time compared to what it was like. So it's like trying to forget those dark years, you know, 75 to 79, and you're just hanging on, holding on to this. Because like in Cambodian culture, I mean, back in Cambodia, when I go visit my family friends there, they don't have those big gatherings as much as we actually do here, because there people have had to rebuild, you know, and poverty changes everything. And it changes the mentality of the folks too. You know, you might not be as generous as you would be with your food and things like that, mm-hmm. as we see with the toilet paper, but you know, but here in the States, I think it's so important. And Cambodians really hang on to that because it's something familiar and something that you could feel good about and reminds you of when things were good, the music and the food and the people, you know?